And so we think that if we teach the story of what love is to our children, then everything else tends to fall into place. But what do our children think of love? We speak frequently to young people's groups. And one of the things we like to do is find out what they think of love. We like to walk in front of a group and simply throw out the question, what is love? And ask them to come back to us and say, what do you think love is? And it turns out that love is apparently many things. They love their parent and their baby brother, and the Sunday schoolers love God or their neighbor, whoever that is. Anyway, on the Sabbath or on Sunday, but then they love to dance. But these aren't real loves, apparently. These have various connotations. But then when we get down to the fiancé or the boyfriend or the girlfriend, oh good, now their eyes light up, and now they're with us, because now this is the real love, you see. This is real love. And so we like to tell them a little story, and maybe we'll tell you this story. As a matter of fact, why don't we make you teenagers just for a minute, or young unmarried adults. Put yourself in this position. You are in a convertible. Maybe you'll understand this love better then. You're in this convertible on a warm summer night, the two of you, parked on a lonely road, and the moon is there, and there's quiet and solitude. And she lays there in his arms, and he tells her, I love you. They're not married, of course. Okay, some of you have been there, good. All right. He says, I love you, dear. Now, in the name of this love, he asks you a question. And he says, because I love you so much, I want your body tonight. Can I have you? Some of you have still been there. Okay. Now, we're not questioning whether he thinks he loves her or whether she thinks she loves him. But we are asking a question, does he really love her? Or she, him. All right, he's asking her a question that has a number of angles to it. Let's go through them one at a time. He's asking her a question that has a moral overtone to it. For her to say yes or no to this question, she's making a judgment that almost certainly has a moral connotation. For her, it is right or wrong. It is good or it is sin. However she judges it, and you judge your own self, but we would suggest that for most of you, he's asking you to turn to your God and to simply say, I will not serve. He's asking you, if you wish, to sin, to possibly surrender eternal life above in the name of his love. There's another angle to the question. He's asking you to maybe get pregnant tonight. And some wise looks, of course, because most of you know what to use, and, you know, nobody gets pregnant anymore. The smart ones don't anymore. Look, let's tell our children, please. Contraceptives don't work 100%. They don't even work 90%. The average contraceptive used in that automobile by that young couple that night only reduces the chance for pregnancy about 3/4. But the chance is really there she might get pregnant. A social catastrophe for her, and think of the baby. Part 3 of the question has to do with venereal disease. And now they almost laugh, some of them do, because they all know that went out with World War II. And here again we have to remind you that we're in the midst of a rapidly rising epidemic of syphilis and gonorrhea in our country. In some places, increasing by 50 and 100% a year over the last few years. Nobody's thinking about it. Nobody's going for treatment. Nobody's reporting it. We're going to be in real trouble shortly. The increase is across the board of the socioeconomic strata. It's just as much up in the hilltop society neighborhood as it is down across the tracks in the slum neighborhood. And so, is she his first? Are they both clean? All right. There's one more part to the question which is significant, more or less, and sometimes very significant, and that is that he is asking her to perform an action of intimate sexuality with him. You know, a man, in a sense, can take his sex and walk away and not be as affected by it as a woman. But I might quote one of our leading authorities in this country who, not long ago, at a very sophisticated Eastern Girls College, said this: no woman is ever intimate with a man and walks away unchanged. She leaves with him something of herself. And we couldn't agree more. In spite of everything you hear, we have found very little to change our firm conviction that premarital intimacy is rarely of benefit to the happiness of a marriage, and almost always is destructive toward that goal of happiness within marriage. So, if you wish, then, he's asking her a question. He says, I love you, dear. Let me destroy you spiritually, socially, physically, perhaps even maritally someday, in the name of love. Now the question, does he really love her? You adults, have you ever heard such a loaded question in all your life? Turning to young people again, let us ask you the question, does he really love her, or she him? And many heads say no. And some of you are still, oh, and there's a hand back there, yeah. But doctor, what if he really loves her? Yes, 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 oh yes. Now we've got a lot of heads bobbing. That's the question many of you now asking. What if he really loves her? Doesn't that make it all right? They still didn't get it.
And yet, as adults, what do we think of love? And what do we teach our children? And how do we explain love to our children? Is there a common denominator, or are there all these different loves of parents and brothers and sisters, neighbor, God, our spouse? How do we fit all these in? Are we straight on it? Well, let's look for some direction, and let's look at the Bible and see what it says. It says, God so loved the world that he gave us his only Son. That Son so loved us that he gave us his life. And through many great books of religion, you find this sentence repeated. Greater love than this hath no man than that he would give his life for his friends. I think we see a common word there. Love is giving. It's a gift freely given, no strings attached. I hope you'll love me in return, but this isn't a condition of my love. I love you. Why? Because I want the best for you. I'm concerned for you. Why? I want you to be happier, healthier, holier, more secure, more content, whatever it is. I'm concerned for you who I love. And if you look at it this way, the loves are the same. They are expressed, though, in different ways. How do you love your parents? However you show your true concern for your parents, what you do for them. How do you love your neighbors? Well, how do you show real concern for them, want the best for them? And what do your children see in your home? How do they see your expression of love between mother and father? Now, for most children, they grow up thinking old married people, oh, they don't really love each other. Now, old married people, from children's standpoints, anybody over 25, and they just sort of take it for granted that those old people don't love each other, you know. That's kind of, you know. And yet, our children should grow up knowing that mother and father do love each other. And we strongly suggest that you let the children see you kiss and embrace and let your delight show through so that they do know that mom and dad do love each other. Because they shouldn't see this for the first time in a parked automobile, but they should know good expressions of love belong in a loving home. Even say maybe sit down on the couch and pitch a little woo in front of the children. So
well, don't get too passionate in front of them, but...
You can't get too far anyway. There's always one of the little ones in between you trying to get their share.
Our dog even separates us.
But they should know that mother and dad love each other. And then as they grow, how do you explain sex to the children? Well, you say to them, you know how a kiss is a way of saying, I love you. It's a deeper way than words, isn't it? And the same with sex. Sex is the deepest possible physical way of saying to your partner, I love you completely. I want you to be happy. I'm concerned for you. I give myself completely to you who I love because I want you to be happy. Now, if our children could understand this and grow up and realize that no matter all, when they hear all the other abuse and misuse, it doesn't change the basic goodness as sex was planned. What a different world our children would grow up into if they knew the truth about this beautiful gift of sex and the way that married people can truly express love.
Now, Barbara speaks of a gift, and we've used the name of God, and we think he belongs. We've also said that some of this prudishness, however, we have identified with religious faith. Now, how does this square? Well, in fact, no religious faith has ever taught that sex was bad or evil. Those who have been branded as heretics and thrown out of the churches. And yet, church men and church women, and we ourselves, have felt and taught many of these prudish tendencies. We as a culture. So how do we square this with religion? If you believe, turn back again to the first book in the Bible of Genesis, and we read that God made man and woman, male and female, he made them. To his own image he made him, and he saw that this was very, very good. Now that's clear enough. It simply means that the first man and woman were made with all the original same factory equipment that each one of us came with, including all of our sex organs. Apparently it wasn't a mistake after all. It was done on purpose. How were they to use this? He instructed them to increase and multiply and subdue the earth. Now, translated, that means that he told the first man and woman to have sexual intercourse and thereby to co-create babies with him. In the infinite wisdom of Almighty God, before evil, sin, whatever you have, entered the world, before Adam and Eve rebelled, before their original sin, however we believe these tenets of faith, before any of this crept into the world, in the glory of the garden, sexual intercourse was created and instructed and used. Couldn't be too bad in those circumstances then, could it?
And all through the Old Testament we see marital terms used, and from the Jews we have gained a great heritage of a real appreciation of family and dignity to marriage.
The New Testament, we as Christians would feel, went yet one further step along this line, although Christians as a group have been very mixed up in this prudishness, and Jews as a group haven't been affected by it. But the Christian marries in church, calls marriage sacred, a sacrament. There's a great marvel to this. Our churches encourage it. We call the baby a blessed event, you know. We haven't always thought of the start of the baby, though, as a blessed event.
And yet it is just as much, isn't it?